When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
On Sunday, December 18th, 2011, in Spanish Lake, Missouri, 23-year-old Phoenix Colden disappeared after leaving her driveway on the 12,600 block of Country Brook Drive. Oddly, hours after she left her home, her 1998 black Chevy Blazer truck was found across state lines in East St. Louis, Illinois, parked and seemingly left abandoned with no signs of Phoenix nor any sign of a struggle. Over the last 13 years from today in 2024, there has been several interviews with her parents, a few sightings that were confirmed to not be Phoenix, but one that was rather questionable from a friend in passing. With that, you also have a strange call to her mother around 2 months after her disappearance from someone in Beverly Hills, and an interesting discovery that populated soon after Phoenix disappeared that led them to an address. The lead in the other state was so solid that it makes you question everything. It makes you question exactly who Phoenix was, who was around her, and most importantly, what did she need to settle and with who, and where is she today? When you mix secrets, interpretations, and misinformation, you find yourself trying to piece together a case in its details that does not physically exist. What do you do when a case has been reported incorrectly for years? Just complete negligence. My most requested case, with the most convoluted details, to the point where nothing is at all what it may seem. You have a young woman that lived a normal life, attended school, had goals, ambition, and had a support system that most just don't have. The thing with this case is that there are a number of elements that just doesn't make sense. But today, we're going to try to make sense of what we do have. I guarantee that once you silence the public opinion and actually look at the case from a unique angle with fresh ears and eyes, you may have a difference of opinion of what may have happened. We're going to start with the details about Phoenix, the case details and what we know, publicly, solidify a timeline based on the accounts of her parents, the facts of the case, break down every case element, we'll approach some common theories, and close with my opinion. This case is a convoluted one, but full of lies, but I believe the answers aren't too far away. This is the Missing Found Podcast. I'm your host, Jaden Harlow. Before we get into the case, I have a few details to share about the show. The Missing Found is an investigative true crime podcast focusing mainly on unsolved missing person cases in the Black community. The cases that I cover have either gone cold, have little to no media coverage, or have gone without conclusion. You can follow the show on Instagram at The Missing Found or on Medium at The Missing Found to read our original script. I also would like to mention that we have a case suggestion form in the show notes or description box that you can complete to submit your case suggestions that are of the Black and missing. We now have a Patreon that's available to you to become a member in our private community to discuss cases deeper beyond our case analyses through private discussions with me, ad-free episodes, early releases, and much more that's exclusive for members only. The show is now available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. For Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating to help the show reach a broader audience to help find our missing. To access all things of The Missing Found, you can visit our website, themissingfound.com. I ask that you please like, share, comment your thoughts on this case, and subscribe if you find value and want to continue the journey with me to finding our missing and learning about their stories. This is case episode 26, The Disappearance of Phoenix Colden. Phoenix Lucille Colden was born on Monday, May 23, 1988 in California. She is the only daughter to both Goldia and Lawrence Colden. Phoenix was born as Phoenix Reese until Goldia got married to Lawrence and both of their surnames changed to Colden. Soon after, Lawrence had acquired a job that required him to relocate to Missouri. From there, the Coldens relocated nearly 2,000 miles away to Spanish Lake, a suburb of St. Louis. At this time, Phoenix was around the age of 12. Phoenix and her parents lived in their home on the 12,600 block of Country Brook Drive. While in Missouri, she was homeschooled for some years starting in 6th grade all the way up to 12th grade, and she took on some extracurricular activities to occupy her time. Phoenix played the handbells at church, enjoyed learning, played the piano, loved music, and was a fencing champion. According to those closest to her, she had a personality that was described as being reserved, funny, and creative. After graduating high school, Phoenix attended college at University of Missouri, St. Louis, which is UMSL. She started attending college in 2007. Phoenix was around the age of 19 at this time. She wanted to have her own apartment so she can experience some independency. With her parents being as supportive as they were, Goldia and Lawrence had agreed for Phoenix to live away from home and off campus, in her own apartment. And she had a vehicle, a black 1998 Chevy Blazer, and this is where things begin. Before we go any further, I want to give you some names that you will hear throughout the analysis. Goldia Colden, Phoenix's mother. Lawrence Colden, Phoenix's father. Officer Perry, reporting officer. Mike B., Phoenix's boyfriend. Cell phone Mike, a guy who had a love interest in Phoenix. He worked at a local cell phone store. Rosie, Goldia's friend. Akira, Phoenix's friend. Kelly, another one of Phoenix's friends. Chandrea Thomas, journalist. John Delia, retired detective. And Detective Foster, private investigator. The case details. One sweet day. On Sunday, December 18th, 2011, the last Sunday before Christmas, it was an unseasonably warmer day, reaching a high of 57 degrees during the winter season in Missouri. Phoenix and her mother, Goldia, had attended their usual Sunday morning church service at Westminster Presbyterian Church, where Phoenix played the handbells. Prior to church service, choir rehearsal started at 10 a.m., and church service was over at noon. On this Sunday, Phoenix chose not to sit with her mother and sat two pews behind her, creating some distance. After service, Goldia and Phoenix spoke briefly, and Goldia mentioned she will go to fellowship with the other members. Phoenix replied that she will sit in her truck, the 1998 Chevy Blazer, and for her not to take too long. Fellowship concluded at 1 p.m. Once Goldia finished fellowship, she returned to Phoenix's truck and they both went to Aldi's, a local grocery store in the vicinity of where they lived. During the shopping trip at Aldi's, Goldia noticed that Phoenix was on her cell phone. Throughout the morning, there were some calls that came into Phoenix's phone from a family friend and someone who had a relationship with Phoenix, who we will referred to as Mike B. I want to mention that I will refer to him as Mike B because he has not yet been publicly named or addressed by his full name. And yes, I have his full name and aware of it, but out of respect and privacy of him, I will have to use that pseudonym. For the timestamps of the calls, I will go into detail of them in our timeline. After the Aldi's trip, both Phoenix and Goldia returned home a little after 2 p.m. While at home, Phoenix assumably helped unpack the groceries, possibly changed clothes, then went outside to shoot hoops on their basketball court at their home. Phoenix had eventually came back inside, walked past her father, Lawrence, exited the door, then sat in her truck that was in her driveway for about 5 to 10 minutes. This was not uncommon for her to do, as she did this often, where she would sit in her car to talk on the phone. After the call or just her sitting in the driveway, she left out of the driveway, just to never be seen or heard from again from her parents. This is where we're left in mystery for 13 years. a little over a decade of unanswered questions, but then there's more. Phoenix's 1998 Chevy Blazer was found within hours of her leaving home, and I'll explain the oddity of her vehicle found in the case breakdown. Just hours later, at around 5:27 p.m., a call supposedly came into the East St. Louis PD to report an abandoned vehicle near the intersection of 9th and St. Clair Avenue. A minute later, East St. Louis police officer Kendall Perry was dispatched to respond to the call. Before we move forward, I want to mention to those unfamiliar with St. Louis, Missouri, and East St. Louis, East St. Louis is located in Illinois, while St. Louis is located in Missouri, two separate states, two separate jurisdictions, and two separate police departments. The distance between East St. Louis and Spanish Lake is about a 30-minute drive. Once Officer Perry arrived to the scene, he assessed the vehicle to ensure it wasn't stolen. He then made a police report that indicated the vehicle was left abandoned. The scene was cleared, and Officer Perry advised the dispatcher to contact the tow company to tow Phoenix's truck. The vehicle then ended up in a tow yard where it would sit for 2 long weeks before the Coldens were even informed of it being there. After their multiple attempts and searches to find their daughter within that 2 weeks. After Phoenix did not return home that evening of December 18th, which was totally uncharacteristic for her since she never stayed out too late and just didn't return home, Godia felt something was off. Godia felt this instinct around midnight. She told Lawrence that Phoenix has not gotten home yet. They waited and waited and still no Phoenix. The Coldens reported her missing the next day. An officer from St. Louis County had arrived at the Colden residence. He took a report, ran the tags, and kept running them, but there was no hit when there should have been since the vehicle was reported to the police in East St. Louis and towed. This means the license plates were not entered into the database. This crucial element is what caused substantial delay in the case, including the fact that she was 23 years old, making her an adult that could technically go missing if she chose to. To note, a tow sheet was never done, but it should have been. Perhaps it was done, but there is no record of it, and there is an interesting but odd explanation to this, and we will discuss it in our case breakdown. You may wonder if this was done intentionally or just an unfortunate oversight. The following year, on Thursday, January 1st, 2012, exactly 14 days after Phoenix pulled out of her driveway, Godia received a call from a family friend who apparently heard about Phoenix's disappearance. He was seemingly shocked to hear about Phoenix going missing. According to Godia, he said on the call, quote, "What is this I hear about Phoenix being missing? If this is somebody's idea of a joke, it's not funny," end quote. Godia responded and said that it wasn't a joke, and she provided him with the specifics of what happened that day prior to and after Phoenix left home. The family friend then asked for the description of Phoenix's car and the license plate number. He took matters into his own hands and performed his own search and was able to locate the missing truck. According to Godia, the call came back from the family friend within 15 minutes. He was able to acquire a massive amount of information in just 15 short minutes with details relevant to her vehicle actually being impounded, dates, and times. Oddly, St. Louis County PD in Missouri claimed to have been running the tags and nothing populated. This could be due to the tow sheet not being initiated, but you question now, how could this person locate the details when there was no record of the tow? The conflict Godia had with the family friend is how he was able to find out this information that quick, when the police department was unable to pull this information themselves. Let me break this down a little further. So Godia has sent out 2 emails. One email was sent around 3 or 4 days after Phoenix left home to inform her network of people that Phoenix was missing. In the second email, which was sent 2 days after the first email, there was an attachment that contained the original missing person flyer that had Phoenix's description, photos, description of her vehicle, and the license plate number. What makes this call interesting is that this particular family friend was actually on the 2 emails. So it was surprising, I would say, that this person called as if he did not know or wasn't aware that Phoenix was missing. In fact, he already knew for nearly 2 weeks since his call came in on January 1st, 2012. He already had the description of the vehicle and the license plate number when this information was sent to him, but he called as if he didn't know. Family friend or associate has never been publicly mentioned, nor his occupation. But Goldia did not know him to be in law enforcement or connected to it. And I do want to say that I do have his name. Law enforcement has a national database that they can access to find out these instances. But how were they unable to locate this information? But he was. This is interesting, but sadly not enough to elaborate further on. It makes you question if there was a role of involvement, know-all, or something else. As far as we know, according to an interview on the Real Talk with Tamara show, this family friend is no longer in contact with the Coldens. After finding out this information, Lawrence then contacted the St. Louis County PD to inform them of where Phoenix's car was, or might be according to this family friend. Sure enough, it was impounded and the Coldens went to retrieve the 1998 Chevy Blazer that was registered in Goldia's name and recovered all of Phoenix's belongings that were in the vehicle, even though the police report stated that the vehicle was empty. One other interesting mention is that on the police report taken by Officer Perry, it stated, quote, female victim. When the original report was taken, there was no assumption that there was a crime or any crime had taken place. This vehicle simply appeared to have been left parked and abandoned. I want to also mention that Phoenix's truck was a 1998 Chevy Blazer model, which did not have automatic power door locks. Auto lock became available in the 2001 and higher models. What significance this holds is that the keys seemingly were not left in the vehicle and purposely left unlocked if Officer Perry was able to get inside. This detail is not public, but something to consider. If you're familiar with this case or not, you would remember that it has been reported that the vehicle was actually blocking a lane and left with the engine running. Sadly, this element is false, and the Chevy Blazer was never left running with the keys in the ignition nor with the door open. Instead, it was as if the vehicle was left abandoned, as if it were parked and left on the side of the road. I'm unsure where this ideology came from, but it has been reported incorrectly for years, publicly. Which this threw off the case because it creates the idea that Phoenix had been taken abruptly out of her truck since the door was said to have been left open and the engine running, which sounds like a setup for an abduction. This element is important to note because I want you to think of how many times you were on the highway, passed by vehicles on the shoulder that appear to be parked and abandoned, just like Phoenix's. In those situations, have you ever thought to call the police? I can almost bet that majority of you would say no. It makes you wonder, who called the police? The call to East St. Louis PD came in at 5:27 p.m., and Phoenix was said to have left home at 3:05 p.m. It's about a 30-minute drive from Phoenix's home to where her vehicle was left parked in East St. Louis, Illinois, crossing over state lines. We don't know when her vehicle was parked in the area of 9th and St. Clair, but the fact that the call came in not even 2 hours after she pulled out of the driveway is interesting. So, who made the call? Who called the police on this vehicle that was just left on the side of the road? What stuck out to them that they needed to call the police? The area that her vehicle was left in was a construction site, and it was not blocking any lanes. I've considered that perhaps someone who was working on the site reported the vehicle, but that has not yet been proven or publicly communicated, so we can't allude to that. As of today, we have no idea who called in to report the vehicle. However, I am sure that the call is still on record and in Phoenix's case file with the PD. We know there had to be another vehicle involved, whether Phoenix drove her truck there to East St. Louis or someone else did. Crossing state lines just seemed like the perfect thing to do. Two different states, two different police departments, and two different jurisdictions, and conveniently right next to Interstate 70 to make an easy and quick drop-off then getaway. Surely, there had to be another vehicle to transport the driver, whoever that may have been. Had there not been another vehicle, the driver would have been on foot. Though not impossible, I find it least likely if a crime was committed, and we don't know yet if a crime was committed. This is where things sit and will continue to sit for the next almost 13 years. From here, I want to build a timeline with you so we can understand exactly where we stand with the details, leading up to what was going on with Phoenix before and after she pulled out of her driveway. From here, we will fill in the gaps in our case breakdown and even discuss the events that took place the day before she left. The timeline. 2007. Phoenix starts college at around age 19. May 2011, Phoenix moves back home with her parents. December 2011, the Coldens family vehicle was in the auto shop, so they depended on Phoenix for transportation. Phoenix's vehicle was registered under Goldia's name. Saturday, December 17th. At 10:59 p.m., there was a 116-minute phone call with Mike B. On Sunday, December 18th, the day Phoenix went missing, assumably, at 9:34 a.m., there was a phone call with Rosie, Goldia's friend, that lasted 2 minutes. At 9:41 a.m., there was a phone call with Mike B. that lasted for 6 minutes. At 10 a.m., choir rehearsal started. Between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m., both Goldia and Phoenix attend service after rehearsal. Between 12 p.m. and 1 p.m., Goldia attended fellowship while Phoenix waited in her vehicle. Sometime after 1 p.m., Goldia and Phoenix went to Aldi's, a local grocery store. At 1:46 p.m., there was an outgoing phone call that lasted 1 minute. This call could have went unanswered because typically when a call registers as 1 minute, it could have been an actual 1 minute call or it could have been a call that went to voicemail. Sometime after 2 p.m., both Goldia and Phoenix arrived back at home to unpack the groceries. Around this time, Phoenix went outside in the yard to shoot some hoops. At 3 p.m., Phoenix walks past her father, Lawrence, exits the front door, and sits in her vehicle. It's not known what she was doing in her truck, but it is assumed that she was on the phone. At 3:05 p.m., Phoenix backs out of her driveway just to never be seen or heard from again. At 5:27 p.m., a call comes into East St. Louis PD to report a vehicle on the side of the road. At 5:28 p.m., a police officer was dispatched. At 5:35 p.m., Officer Kendall Perry arrives on the scene of the vehicle. And at 6:36 p.m., the scene was cleared after awaiting the tow truck. There were no incoming calls after December 18th on the phone that was on the family plan. It was later shared that Phoenix did have a second phone, and the records of that device are being held close to the investigation. On Monday, December 19th, Phoenix was reported missing by her parents to the St. Louis PD. On Sunday, January 1st, 2012, Goldia received a questionable call from a family friend regarding Phoenix's disappearance. The family friend finds out information regarding Phoenix's Chevy truck being impounded and contacted the Coldens again. Lawrence then contacts the St. Louis County PD to inform them of the location of the vehicle. Now, the case breakdown. The thing about this case is that you will find that there are secrets, lack of details, and misconceptions. I believe the answers aren't too far from home and may lie somewhere in the details and in her last few phone calls and those interconnected with Phoenix. The problem is, we don't really know which way to connect the dots to this mystery until after we've uncovered some of the more intricate details that no one talks about. The case was introduced to me some time ago and I knew I wanted to explore the details deeper. Phoenix received some media coverage, not much, but there are several videos constructed by creators, but they all seem to place blame on Phoenix's parents, specifically her mother, Goldia, and conclude to Phoenix running away due to their strict religious standards, which I don't believe to be true and unlikely. The answers are not in the creator videos, podcasts, they're not in the Oxygen special that covered Phoenix's disappearance in 2018, but I'm looking at the inner details, where I believe the answers do lie. I want to analyze every detail through and through, and try to make sense of this nearly 13-year mystery to help you formulate a calculated and educated opinion. You will find that I will analyze each of the series of events and revelations that came about that led up to Phoenix going missing. This will help formulate an opinion and understand small details of her frame of mind before she was reported missing and last seen on record. So let's start from the top. Phoenix moves out. We know Phoenix started college in 2007 when she was 19. What we don't know is if she started college at UMSL or if there was another school she attended prior. We don't know the exact date, but Phoenix wanted to move out of her parents' home to experience independence. The original plan was for her to have the apartment rented for her and her friend Brianna to occupy. However, it was later revealed that Phoenix had actually been living in the apartment with Mike B., her boyfriend at the time. It was mentioned on the Oxygen special that Goldia would take visits to the apartment, but there was no indication that Phoenix had a male living with her. My take is that perhaps he wasn't living there, but spending nights. And this was totally against Goldia's rules. We don't know what arrangement Phoenix had with Mike B, but he was staying there. He was her boyfriend. So who is Mike B? In order to make sense of this case, we need to know who Mike B is. As I've already stated, I will not share the young man's last name and only refer to him as Mike B, since that is what he has been publicly named and referenced as. His last name does not impact the case analysis since law enforcement is already aware of his name. Phoenix met Mike B at a car dealership where she worked during the summer. The father of Mike B, which is Mike B Sr., worked there. Mike B was not known to the Coldens, nor did they even know she had a boyfriend until after she went missing, let alone him staying with her. It was mentioned that Phoenix did spend some time with his family and they were familiar with her. The family of Mike B extends far beyond the father working at a car dealership. The uncle of Mike B Sr., which would make him the great uncle of Mike B, was actually the comptroller of Illinois from 1979 to 1991 and held office as a United States Senator in 2009, succeeding Barack Obama, who resigned to become the President of the United States. Think about that for a second. The aforementioned does not directly contribute to the case, but it gives you an idea of what we're dealing with and possibly who. Again, this is not to say Mike B is involved, but it is something to mention. So, who is Cell Phone Mike? You will remember I had mentioned there was another Michael that Phoenix had contact with, named Cell Phone Mike. Cell Phone Mike, who I also have the full name for, is given this pseudonym because Phoenix met him at a T-Mobile store at the Jamestown Mall. In fact, he actually either sold her a phone or had contact with her regarding her phone and bill. The phone that I'm referring to is Phoenix's second phone. Try to follow me here. Phoenix had two phones. One cell phone was on a family plan with her mother and father, and the other phone was a personal phone that she had acquired on her own without knowledge from her parents. And I will dive into this in a few minutes. In the Oxygen special, they made it appear that this other young man was a second boyfriend. But after some research, it has been communicated from Goldia that Cell Phone Mike was actually someone who expressed interest in Phoenix. According to the Candy and Sean show and Real Talk with Tamara, Goldia spoke on this. He was talking to Phoenix, but not an official boyfriend. One may see this as Phoenix juggling two men, Mike B and Cell Phone Mike, but we don't know the dynamic or the timeline of Mike B and Phoenix's relationship. Phoenix moves back home. Phoenix ended up moving back home in May 2011. At this time, Phoenix was either about to turn 23 or already 23. Goldia stated in the Oxygen special that the reasoning for her moving back home is because it did not make sense for Phoenix to be attending school at UMSL when she could live at home versus paying for an apartment. I want you to keep in mind that this move took place only 7 months before she went missing. Within that 7 months, you can imagine how transformative this was for not only her parents, but for Phoenix. We have a 23-year-old young woman who has been living on her own within her own independence to attend school, then now to transition to moving back home with her parents. This could have brought some tension and conflict, as you can imagine. Now, we don't have all of the specifics, but Goldia mentioned that something was visibly wrong with Phoenix. She was a little thinner than usual. Friends had said there would be arguments and disagreements at home, and one friend even said she would leave home for days at a time and dismantle communication with Goldia. But Goldia refuted this claim made by the friend. This is something that I cannot confirm, but it is what has been stated. Phoenix in school. It was revealed that Phoenix actually was not attending her semester nor enrolled at UMSL, even though she communicated that she was enrolled. According to her friend, Tim Baker, on the Oxygen special. Why was Phoenix being dishonest about attending school? I don't know, but one can assume it could have been because she was dealing with whatever she was dealing with and decided to not attend school. My question is, why would she lie to Tim, assuming Tim was not in nor associated with her circle of friends that she was connected to since she had been away for some time? And based on his appearance on the Oxygen special, they were friends, grew up together, but perhaps Phoenix had separate groups of friends and Tim did not appear to be a part of that friend group Phoenix may have acquired. I hope you follow me here. Two phones. As I've already stated, it was revealed that Phoenix actually had two phones. One phone was on the Colden's family plan, then another was through T-Mobile. We don't know Phoenix's sole reason behind having two phones. When I think of this, it appears she was trying to hide something. I don't know if she was trying to hide who she was communicating with, if the second phone was used for illegal activities, or if it was to exclusively talk to cell phone Mike. The thing is, we don't know all of what was going on, what she was into or got involved in. As it has been publicly stated, there were no incoming calls that came in after she disappeared on the family plan phone. What we don't know is if there were any calls that came in to the second phone or any call that were outgoing. St. Louis PD officer Benjamin Granda said they cannot share whether or not any further calls came in after Phoenix left. They also cannot say where the phone pinged. Both phones were checked. As you can imagine, this raises a cause for concern. It makes you question, where did the phone ping? Because this will let us know if she did, in fact, drive her truck to East St. Louis. It also makes you question, where was she going? If she was going somewhere to meet up with someone, then she most likely had to have contacted the person to inform them that she was on her way, or if they're at a location where she is headed, whether it was from her phone on the family plan or second phone. Her leaving in the manner in which Lawrence described is not a major concern for me because it was not uncommon that she would sit in her vehicle and talk on the phone, but it was uncommon for her to just leave without saying anything. Her leaving without saying anything could be a sign that she was frustrated but determined. It's almost like she was trying to settle something once and for last. What that something is that she was trying to settle is unbeknownst to me. I think if we had the answer, then we would be able to solve this case. When you look at the manner in which she left, you look at her last moments on record. We know she had a nearly 2-hour call from Mike B's phone number. What we don't know is if she was actually speaking with Mike B or someone else. We can assume she was speaking with him, but it's not entirely clear if he was the one talking to her. The note. At some point after Phoenix left home, there was a note found in Phoenix's truck. The note was discovered by Goldia. The full contents of the note has never been released to the public, but as Goldia recounts, it stated that Phoenix had to make a decision quick before 2012, or they will show her what they will do to her parents. During the time before she went missing, Phoenix did appear smaller in size, as I've already stated. She did not enroll in classes, and from knowing that, it was apparent that she was dealing with something, and it was potentially concerning for her safety. I want to get back to the note for a second. It's not clear when the note was written. It could have been written when Goldia was in fellowship after church, while Phoenix sat in the car, or it could have been that morning or another day. The note was ripped in large pieces, but two pieces of the paper that the note was written on were missing. The torn-up note was put into her glove compartment. Phoenix could have thrown the ripped-up note in the trash, but instead she left it in her vehicle. The note was as if she was writing down something that someone had told her, sort of like her recounting the conversation. Whoever communicated the details in the note did not give her much time to make this decision. I question, as I'm sure you're questioning, what was so significant as to what she had to make a decision about? Who made this threat? The note indicated they, which means more than one person. Who are these people and how did they know Phoenix? What were they involved in? Phoenix went missing on December 18th, assuming that this is the official date since that date is the day she walked out of her home. From December 18th to January 1st, 2012, that left her with 13 days until the new year. This leads me to believe that whoever had this conversation with her that relayed this message is who knows what happened or what was supposed to happen if Phoenix did not make whatever decision by year 2012. Did Phoenix drive to East St. Louis? I have no proof or nothing solid to back my claim, but there is a possibility that Phoenix did not drive her Chevy Blazer to East St. Louis. Here's why I say this. At the time, 9th and St. Clair, which is the area in which her vehicle was located, that exact area was a construction site. The only way you would know about that construction site is if you knew East St. Louis very well. It looks quite different today than it did 13 years ago. If I had to guess, I would say the vehicle was driven there to throw off whatever happened from the short time she left home to the time her vehicle was found, which was only around a little over 2 hours. The drive from where the Coldens lived to the location where Phoenix's vehicle was found is only a 30-minute drive. We have a little over an hour of time unaccounted for after Phoenix drove out of her driveway. Being that it was a construction site back then, it may have appeared to be a desirable area to dump a vehicle. When I look at it being a construction site, I find it interesting, or an interesting location, I should say, to leave a vehicle on a late Sunday afternoon, early evening. At some point, the contractors would have seen the vehicle because it may have had interference with their work. However, in this case, the vehicle was reported at 5:27 p.m. to the East St. Louis PD. A question that I've always struggled with in this case is who actually called to report the vehicle. It could have been a concerned individual who had nothing to do with the case, or it could have been someone related to quickly get the vehicle found and removed. In my opinion, there would be no reason to quickly get the vehicle out of sight because it was already dumped. As I've already stated, law enforcement more than likely has the details of the call in the actual recording itself. Another thought that came to mind is that there is a possibility that if Phoenix was not the driver of the vehicle to 9th and St. Clair in East St. Louis, then there surely had to have been an accompanying vehicle to pick up the person that did drive the vehicle there. Again, this is only if Phoenix was not the driver. This other vehicle would have been used to knowingly tell the person driving in Phoenix's truck, the driver dumps it at 9th and St. Clair, then exits the truck and enter into the accompanying vehicle and drives off. Again, this is only speculation. I will leave you with this before we progress forward. It has been stated that there were no other fingerprints in her vehicle but hers and her family. There is a possibility that Phoenix drove the vehicle there, which I think is least likely. Or we're dealing with someone skilled in this and could have simply worn gloves to conceal his or her fingerprints. Or it could be a false statement where law enforcement knows otherwise and is being held close to the investigation, just like with a lot of the details of this case. Sometimes it's all in who you know, possibly. Cadaver dogs were brought in to search the area, but oddly, Phoenix's scent was not picked up in the area. This could further allude to her not being the driver of her vehicle to the exact spot or even in the vehicle at the time it was parked and left in that spot. When you look at the time she left home to when her vehicle was found, to when the call came in to law enforcement to report the vehicle, the time window is only 2 hours. I'm unsure, and I hope I don't regret saying this, but this sounds like it was orchestrated in a way to get the vehicle off the streets for whatever reason. The missing tow sheet. A tow sheet should have been done for Phoenix's vehicle since Officer Perry requested a tow. He mentioned that nothing stuck out to him regarding the vehicle and initially thought it just ran out of gas. Again, this goes back to how the case was reported incorrectly for years, with stating the keys were in the ignition, engine running with the door open to create the ideology that Phoenix drove to East St. Louis and was abducted from her driver's seat. We learned that this is unlikely since Phoenix's scent, according to our source, was never picked up in the vicinity in which her Chevy Blazer was found. Now back to the tow sheet. According to the source, a call was made to Goldia. It was from a woman who mentioned that her cousin worked at the tow yard and Officer Floor told them to not do a tow sheet on the vehicle. The source believes that because a tow sheet was not done, it could have been because they possibly wanted to sell the parts or steal the vehicle. To analyze this further, a gentleman by the name of Michael Baxson Sr. was a former police officer chief in East St. Louis during the time Phoenix went missing. After finding out where the vehicle was from the family friend, remember when I had mentioned the family friend finding out where Phoenix's vehicle was located? Well, the Codens wanted to retrieve the vehicle and the desk sergeant called the tow yard. The price to obtain the vehicle was $1,300. Baxson got her the meeting with the mayor to avoid the fee since their daughter was missing. Well, only months after Phoenix went missing, he pled guilty in January 2012.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
For stealing Xbox 360 game systems that were planted in a bait car set up by the FBI in October 2011 as part of a sting operation. Ex-Police Chief of East St. Louis, Michael Floor, was charged with falsifying work as a Metrolink security guard. The charges were brought on because he defrauded the government by falsely claiming to have done work for Metrolink. The charges against Floor were Class 3 felonies. Floor served as a police chief from January 2012 to 2015. Prior to him was Mr. Michael Baxton Sr. I bring this up because it shows that there possibly was something going on within the East St. Louis Police Department that could have possibly impacted or interfered with Phoenix's case, since she was not from East St. Louis, but her vehicle was found in their jurisdiction, and the reporting officer was from that department, which meant they had to work the case. It makes you wonder if there was something missed, or was this department crooked, allegedly, and based on the charges from the ex-police chiefs. The contents in the vehicle. While we're on the vehicle and the way it was found, it was initially reported that Phoenix's Chevy Blazer was found with the keys in the ignition and the engine running. We learned in the Oxygen special that this reporting is false. It has been reported incorrect for several years, and the origin of that claim is unknown. In the police report, it did not state the engine was running. It was found by Officer Perry as if it were parked and left. That's it. There were several items normal everyday items in her vehicle. In addition to the other items, there were fresh lemon slices in a 32-ounce styrofoam cup without any residue that a drink was in the cup. But oddly, the lemon slices did not match any store in the local area. The Coldens claimed to have went to multiple places to see if she possibly have stopped in to acquire the lemon slices, but nothing ever materialized from this search. Phoenix was said to have liked sour things, so it wasn't uncommon to find her with fresh lemon slices. Goldia is unsure if she went to someone's home to get the lemon slices or where she went to get them. If she did go to someone's home, then whose home was it? This would provide insight into her last movements on record and who was in her presence shortly before her disappearance. The Anchorage, Alaska Mystery. In the Oxygen special, Joe Delia met with private investigator Dean Duke. Dean was able to pull information on cell phone Mike, and that is how they were able to acquire details about him and his relationship with Phoenix. As for Phoenix, he recovered some vital information that he thought could have led to Phoenix. Dean performed a skip trace on Phoenix Colden and Phoenix Reeves. Skip trace is a legal process used in searching for someone, whether they're unresponsive, missing, or you're simply trying to locate them. It is commonly used in investigations, and we use it here at The Missing Found for our cases. Now, you're probably wondering why Dean started his search with Phoenix Reeves. Well, before Goldia got married to Lawrence Colden, her name was Goldia Reeves. That was her maiden name, making her a single parent at the time to Phoenix Reeves. After they got married, Lawrence adopted Phoenix, in which she acquired his last name, Colden, and Reeves was dropped from her name, making Phoenix's new legal name as Phoenix Colden. Dean started his search with Phoenix Reeves since we learned that Phoenix had two birth certificates, highly likely due to her name change. In the state of California, because that's where she is from, if her name was changed in California before they relocated to Missouri, it is legal to change your name and pay a fee to be issued an amended birth certificate. This would settle the online back and forth about her having two birth certificates and creating a false identity. So I hope that settles that. Dean learned that there are a total of 4 Phoenix Reeves in the United States. He found that one is deceased, 2 have an extensive history of addresses, family, phone numbers, and other sources that prove their identity. The 4th was much different. The 4th Phoenix Reeves did not have any history, no date of birth, no relatives, social security number, nothing. There was only an address that populated January 2012 to June 2012. What this means is there was no record of this 4th Phoenix Reeves prior to January 2012. Phoenix disappeared in December 2011, but the address of this 4th Phoenix Reeves oddly populates that leads them to Anchorage, Alaska. From my knowledge, this is odd, because usually there is some form of history and relatives attached to the subject. In this case, this new Phoenix Reeves seemingly just popped up on the scene and then went ghost after June 2012. And I will explain why this is strange shortly and what this could mean.
Do you love true crime and travel? Having traveled the world solo the last couple of years and being obsessed with true crime, I found myself researching others who took the same vacations but never made it home. The Last Trip is a true crime podcast covering missing and murdered people that were living their best lives on vacation. I'm your host, Jamie Beebe, and each week I'll bring you on The Last Trip, taking a deep dive into vacation culture and travel spots, tips on staying alive while traveling, and ultimately recreating someone's last days in paradise. What led to their last trip? What are the hard facts? What is the final outcome? And could you be next? David Sneddon was a 24-year-old college student from Utah attending Mandarin classes in Beijing when he mysteriously disappeared while hiking Tiger Leaping Gorge. Chinese authorities said he drowned in the gorge, and U.S. authorities agreed, although his body was never found and his parents didn't believe that. 7 years later, out of the blue, they got a phone call from a former U.S. official who had evidence David is still alive. This case sounds like a Hollywood movie, but evidence doesn't lie. So where is David Sneddon? Famous rugby player and celebrity X Factor contestant Levi Davis went missing in Barcelona last year while on a backpacking trip through Europe. Just days before he vanished, he posted a 15-minute video to his Instagram account saying his life was in danger and people were after him. After he disappeared, several theories emerged. But what really happened to Levi Davis? Join me, Jamie Beebe, co-host of the popular true crime series Strictly Stalking, as I embark on a brand new adventure combining true crime and travel. Listen to The Last Trip wherever you get your podcasts.
After June 2012, there was no more movement from this Phoenix Reeves, according to records online regarding the skip trace. Here's why this is strange. Typically, in skip trace, if an address populates for the subject, it could mean that this person has some relation to that address. They could have been living there, had mail going to that address, or some legal documentation was involved and that address was used. Essentially, this means this Phoenix Reeves had to have some form of relation to that address. In what way? Well, we don't know. We can't even be sure it was Phoenix. Again, another element that law enforcement may be holding close to the investigation. The question is, was that by a huge coincidence that this person who was named as Phoenix Reeves just appeared after Phoenix Colden, formerly Reeves, went missing, or was it actually Phoenix? If it was Phoenix, then why did everything go dark after June 2012? Meaning there was no movement, No more use of the name, nor any associates, family members, numbers, or anything else connected or connecting to this person to others. Remember that though we are referencing news reports, media, interviews, and other accounts to gather our analysis, we're also still looking at the Oxygen special. With that, we're taking it with a grain of salt because we know that though the coverage is real for a real case, some things are edited for entertainment. With the newfound information, according to the Oxygen special, Joe and Dean took a trip to Anchorage to actually visit the address that populated under this new Phoenix Reeves and canvassed the neighborhood. There's not much here except for a woman answering the door and claiming to not know who Phoenix nor has a Phoenix ever lived there. No other neighbors knew or even recognized her ever being in the neighborhood. Because this address populated, it doesn't always have to mean she physically lived there. She could have used this address for whatever reason or simply no one saw her. I don't know what to make of this except for what it is. No one knew, recognized, or ever saw her. It brings me to one of the most discussed theories, Phoenix running away. I do believe this is possible, but perhaps least likely. I will explain in my theory discussion. The eerie call from Beverly Hills. Goldia did an interview on the Sean and Candy show that was on Facebook some years back. Goldia shared details about an odd call from Beverly Hills that sounded as if it were Phoenix. 2 months after Phoenix went missing, Goldia received a call in the early morning from what sounded to be Phoenix's voice on the other end. The young woman on the phone repeated "Mom" 3 times. Goldia responded and said, "Phoenix, is that you?" From there, the caller or someone near the caller quickly disconnected the call. Goldia reported it to the St. Louis County PD, and Goldia recounted them asking one question, quote, "How did she sound?" end quote. Goldia responded and said that she sounded scared and weak. The call was allegedly traced to a home in Beverly Hills, and an officer was dispatched to the residence, but they found there to just be only a 14-year-old girl and her mother present at the residence. The actual address was never given to the Coldens. According to Goldia, she went to the Beverly Hills PD herself, and she was told that there was no dispatch call that came in on that day. If there was no dispatch on record, then did someone actually go out to that location to see if there really was any sign of Phoenix or confirm it was a 14-year-old girl and her mother? Was that really Phoenix on the other end of the phone? A mother knows her child's voice, but I understand when one is desperate to find answers, as we all would. If it was Phoenix, that would mean she may have been in a hostage situation 2 months after her disappearance, but why? It makes you think, who was she involved with, or what or who led her into this situation? And most importantly, who benefits from her disappearance? If there was no dispatch, does this mean law enforcement lied? These things are kept on record, and they have to be. It's odd, but I'm only communicating what Goldia mentioned in her interview. The sighting on the flight. Sometime in March 2014, about 3 years after Phoenix went missing, Phoenix's friend Kelly was on a flight. She had already boarded and was seated, but she noticed something was strange as she looked up while watching the other boarded passengers wait in the walkway to take their seats. What she noticed was someone who had a close resemblance to missing Phoenix Coldin, who has since now been missing for 27 months. That's 2 years and 3 months. As you can imagine, this would have startled anyone. Kelly called out Phoenix's name and said, "Phoenix." The young woman in question, according to Kelly, said she looked her way, and the young woman responded and said, quote, "Do I look like someone you know?" end quote. Kelly responded and said, quote, "Yes, you look like my friend Phoenix," end quote. The young woman kept walking as she was accompanied by 2 men and a few other women who were described as being well-dressed and of similar aesthetic. Kelly described the men as looking like pro football players. When you think of pro football players, you think handsome, well-dressed, and a well-built physique. The thing with this sighting is that if someone calls a random name, naturally, you're going to look or respond unless that is your name. Now, there are some exceptions, because if someone yells a name, I'm going to look, and you may too. However, from the way Kelly described this encounter, it seemed as if this young woman was in very close proximity to her. as if she was passing her by on the flight to board. I say this by listening to the context clues. She had a short word exchange with the young woman, and she was close enough to respond, which would mean that they had to be near each other, even briefly. Kelly explained that the woman acknowledged the name Phoenix. What makes this interesting is because it may not have been Phoenix. We have to look at that possibility. If Kelly called out Phoenix's name and was looking directly at the young woman, naturally the young woman would respond with a similar comment. Do I look like someone you know? This could have been Phoenix, or it could have not been, and just someone who had a close resemblance to her. In the Oxygen special, they stated the flight was leaving Las Vegas. I do not believe this to be true. In fact, the flight was not leaving or going to Vegas, allegedly, as I was told by a source close to the subject. So I want to communicate that. The flight was departing Kansas City, Missouri, and arriving to Tampa, Florida, allegedly. The source also communicated that there was not a group of women accompanying Phoenix, maybe only two other women. I have my reasoning as to why the city was said to be Las Vegas, but one of them is because something like that would typically be held close to the investigation. Saying Las Vegas creates the ideology that she was involved in trafficking or some sort of prostitution due to the flight departing Nevada. Now, prostitution is illegal in Las Vegas because it is part of Clark County, but it is legal in other counties within Nevada. After Kelly departed the flight, she claims to have went to the front desk to report her seeing a missing person and contacted Goldia. From what she recounts, officials tried to locate the young woman but was unsuccessful. When you think about it, this could mean that Phoenix onboarded the flight in Kansas City, which is a city in the same state in which she was reported missing. Phoenix and the people accompanying her may have been on a connecting flight where they would have had to connect at Kansas City and they not necessarily walked into the Kansas City airport to board. I also look at that being a possibility because though Kansas City is in Missouri, it's also 3 hours away from St. Louis. Perhaps the search for Phoenix 3 years later did not extend that far. Just knowing from the track record of how our cases are handled, after 3 years, Phoenix's name may have not been heavy in media, if it ever was. You all know how it goes. I know what many of you are thinking. Why couldn't Kelly get up and go to the aircraft restroom to get a closer look since the young woman and the group she was with had to be seated behind Kelly since they were still boarding and walking past her? Why didn't she report it to a flight attendant while the young woman was actually on the aircraft? Why didn't she approach the young woman again? I have those questions too, but I can only imagine that she may have been nervous, confused, and possibly unsure of what just happened. She wasn't expecting to spot her missing friend on a flight in such close proximity on that day. She was adamant that it was Phoenix Colden. The only clear way to know if it was, in fact, Phoenix, the flight manifest would be able to tell the story on if it were her, and possibly who else's name was with her ticket. The thing is, we don't know whatever became of that. Now, this is not hard to find. Catching a flight as a missing person is difficult and nearly impossible if you're under the same name that you had when you went missing. That's not something that you can easily finesse. Whether law enforcement did their due diligence to follow up on this lead, I'm unsure, but I know it would not be difficult. You still have to look at the fact that it may not have been Phoenix, or it very well could have been. We just don't know what law enforcement uncovered. If it were Phoenix, then what exactly does that say? It means she was alive and seemingly well years after she disappeared. This, however, still does not mean she left on her own volition, nor does it mean that she is safe today, in 2024. The theories. I want to discuss some common theories that have been mentioned and discussed over the past decade. Theory 1. Phoenix was taken, kidnapped from her Chevy Blazer. I think this theory is viable and probably the most plausible. When you look at Phoenix's last known moments on record, her father, Lawrence, saw her walk out of her home, sit in the driveway for a few minutes, then pull off that last and final time. While she was sitting in the driveway, she may have been on the phone, which was something that she commonly did. What exactly was her reasoning for leaving that day is still unknown, but I believe someone has the answer. Her vehicle ended up crossing state lines and being left abandoned. The oddity is that her scent was never picked up in the area her truck was found. Someone could have driven her truck to throw off the case. But why? We don't know what Phoenix was involved in or who she was involved with. It could be a thing where Phoenix did not know what she was involved in. Theory 2. Phoenix was lured away. Very similar to Theory 1. I wonder who that last conversation was within the driveway and if there was another phone she had where she was taking calls even after she was considered missing. Her vehicle was found only hours after she left home, which makes me believe whatever she met or whoever she met with someone or some people, it wasn't that far from her residence in Spanish Lake. We don't know what Phoenix knew, what information she had, what she had been involved in, done or connected to. Why was she the target? What we do know is that the last person she was speaking with that previous day, and even the same day, was Mike B. And they had a pretty extensive conversation, whether it was him or someone who had access to his phone. Theory 3. Sex trafficking. There's a possibility that Phoenix was sold into sex trafficking. Because of Phoenix's background, she may have been tricked into something. We don't know all of what was going on in her life, but she was having a hard time and was said to have lost some weight. This leads me to believe she was worrying about something. Something was bothering her. According to Goldia, Phoenix was coming back to herself on the same day she left home for the last and final time. Sex trafficking is a possibility. There's not much else to say about that. Who orchestrated it? That I'm unsure of without knowing the exact people in her life. Detective Foster was a PI on the case since February 2012. We've seen his work on the case for the Bradley sisters. He concludes human trafficking is highly unlikely due to her support system at home. He doesn't believe she went down that road, but there is a possibility that she could have been tricked. He believes she left on her own. She was having some issues with her family. Phoenix was taking money from a safe, her saving bonds. She was cashing them. The money was under $2,500. In his opinion, Phoenix being trafficked does not fit the profile of one who is typically sold into trafficking. Though not off the table, he felt it was least likely in that Phoenix left. Which brings me to my next theory. Theory 4. She staged her own disappearance. Another possibility, but I think it's least likely. However, law enforcement seems to think otherwise. And they very well could be right since they have information that I haven't even touched yet. When you look at the fact that Phoenix was taking small amounts of funds from a safe, which we found was to be hers, the skip trace that led to Anchorage, the possible sighting on the flight, and the eerie selfie video, which we will get into in a moment, it makes you question the possibility of this theory. If she did stage her disappearance, then why? What was her reason for doing so? She would have had to be running from or to something or someone. I have issues with this theory because when you look at all of the facts surrounding the case, it can still mean there was some sort of crime happening that may have caused her to run or think she had to run. We just don't know what that was. If she ran, do we really think she would have put her parents through this of not knowing? Phoenix did receive coverage, so her face is public. People know that she is a missing person. It's just something to think about. If she ran, she had to have help. When you look at the facts, you do question that name populating in skip trace only months after her disappearance. How would you explain that? It is an oddity, but it does sound like something was done using her previous name. Then, you have to consider the selfie video. I remember when I first saw the commercial for the premiere of the Oxygen special, and I saw the clip with Phoenix speaking. What made that so profound is the fact that we had finally got a chance to put a voice to the face and see her in video format, in motion. We watched her mannerisms, heard her speaking voice, facial expressions, body language, and the characteristics of Phoenix in just that short clip. The files that contained the selfie video was taken from Phoenix's personal files from a flash drive. I'm not sure if this video was known to the Coldens or not, but it was in the files along with several other videos and content that she had. I watched the clip, listened to it, and watched it without sound a countless number of times. The clip we saw is not the full video that was taken from her recording device or laptop. The video featured more parts, but media shown only a portion of it, which still gave some insight into what Phoenix was dealing with not long before her disappearance. I want to let you listen to it to understand where things stood and how it may relate to the case. After the video, we will review the vital lines that Phoenix spoke to analyze what she could have been referring to.
Buried in those files, I found a selfie video of Phoenix that I have to share with Joe.
That ditch. This is ridiculous. I just want to start over. I just feel like I can't start the new meal. People don't give a f-. I don't know, right? I gotta see things for what they are, you know, like instead of thinking about it like that, see things for what they are. Lord, please help me accept the things that won't change, and they won't change the things that I can't change.
She was praying, she was asking God to help her. So she's definitely struggling. So she was in trouble.
She said one thing in there that really caught my attention. I just want to start over. Start the new me over. She's talking about starting over. What does that mean?
It's unusual for somebody to stage their disappearance. If she was running from somebody or she was scared, it's not that unusual.
Guess I don't like talking to you, my man or whatever, because I say shit that I don't mean. That's why you want to hold. Hold my composure.
You can see the levels and fluctuations in her personality, too, and like how she was expressing herself.
You did.
Okay, I can see that.
There's a lot of things. I didn't do that crap, so I don't know.
She said something about the cops? Did she say that?
What she's into, we just don't know.
She could have got into a dangerous situation.
I can't remember telling you. Genuinely happy.
So what do you think when you see that?
So to start, got ditched. In the clip, it started out with her saying she got ditched. Now, I've personally never used this phrase before, so I had to research the exact meaning of it. While using context clues of the video, Phoenix seemed stressed, sad, and uncertain. She was in her vehicle at the time the video was made. With Phoenix saying she got ditched, this could mean she was stood up or some form of relationship ended between her and that person. It's not exactly revealed who ditched her. If I had to guess, I would think she was saying Mike B ditched her, as in broke up with her. Perhaps he had another relationship or something occurred where they broke up for whatever reason. It's unclear if she was upset over a breakup or something else. I just want to start over. Whatever she was dealing with was a heavy burden, and she felt the only way to come to terms and move forward is to start over. We don't know what her meaning of start over was. We don't know if what she meant was figuratively, whereas she wanted to make peace with the past and simply move forward, or to start a new life. And some may feel her saying this meant she wanted to start a new life under a new identity, in part, staging her own disappearance. I do feel it's least likely. Again, like I said earlier in my analysis, we don't know all of what Phoenix was involved in and who she was involved with. This comment does not mean Phoenix is a bad person, but perhaps she got involved with so not so great people and she is in too deep and trying to find a way out. Or it could mean that she simply was in a relationship that went bad. In the video, she also said, quote, "I can't seem to start the new me over," end quote. Then proceeds to say, quote, "People don't give a fuck," end quote. She follows this with reciting a modified version of the Lord's Prayer. Whether this was a relationship situation or much deeper, Phoenix felt heavy about it, and it was obviously bothering her a great deal. Just as Joe stated in the special, what does her saying that she wants to start over and start the new her over mean? That's why I don't like talking to people, because I say shit that I don't mean. This lets me know that at some point, Phoenix got into an argument or altercation with someone or some people. What that argument was about, we don't know, but it had to be heavy. Again, this could have been with a person that she was involved with in an intimate relationship, friendship, or some other association. Throughout the video, it was evident that at some point Phoenix became emotional and started crying. Chandrea even mentioned that Akira's Phoenix friend had said that Phoenix was carrying around a knife because she felt she was being followed. Akira even mentioned that Phoenix pulled a knife on her because she felt Akira was talking about her behind her back. Akira also stated that Phoenix says she is packing up and leaving and would not tell her where she was going. I cannot confirm if Akira was being truthful or if there is any validity to this statement regarding the knife and Phoenix saying that she is leaving. The selfie video was made on November 15th, 2011, a month and 3 days before she disappeared. This is her demeanor only a month before her disappearance. It would not be too far off to say this is what she was dealing with prior to her disappearance. My opinion. This is a case that I wanted to cover because I've seen the comments. I've seen the case requests for it and videos that other creators made. In most, if not all, the videos are blaming Phoenix's parents for her disappearance. They say that they were too strict and too religious, but I have to disagree. I believe both Goldia and Lawrence had rules, but you have to remember that Phoenix was 23. And even prior to that, Goldia leased an apartment for Phoenix to allow her some independence by staying with a roommate. She had freedom. Phoenix may have grown up sheltered, but not under a dictatorship household, as some say. What we don't have much information on is the relationship that Phoenix had with her parents. We learned that Phoenix would leave for days at a time and dismantle contact with her mother for unknown reasons. As I've already stated, Goldia refutes this claim. We know Phoenix moved back home in May 2011, 7 months before she backed out of her driveway and seemingly disappeared. The truth is, we don't know all of the details regarding the relationship with her parents. Do I believe it contributed to her disappearance? I believe the secrecy or privacy that Phoenix held contributed, but was not directly related to her disappearance. Do I believe they know more? Yes. Do I believe they're trying to maintain Phoenix's image? Yes. I say this without malice, but because the public has scrutinized the Coldens so much that they may feel the need to keep things one way. Phoenix seemed like a great young woman, but just got intertwined in a terrible situation that she tried to get out of or settle, but things went different. Then, you wonder if that was a her on the plane. This case is complicated. I say that because we don't know what really happened because no one is talking. Phoenix's circle all received a different part of her, which I don't find uncommon. I think we all can relate to that. You know, we had our school friends, our relationships, then the relationship with our parents. Everyone receives a unique part of us, and I believe that to be so with Phoenix. There was something going on, but we just don't know exactly what. When you look at the facts of the case, it makes you question everything. Based on how it was described when Phoenix left her home, to me it seemed as if she was leaving to settle something or perhaps make the decision that someone relayed to her. It seemed like she was going to meet up with someone or some people. I say that because of the note that was discovered from Goldia. The note said something about her having until 2012 to make a decision. Then, you wonder if she did leave on her own. But why? If she left on her own, why didn't she let her parents know for their own safety? How could she have orchestrated this on her own? If she did leave, I don't believe this was done with only her. She had to have help. If that is the case, then there has to be a best-kept secret somewhere in Missouri of why Phoenix left and who helped her, and why, if that is even the case. In order to leave on your own and start a new life, you have to have money to do it. You would have to create a new identity to avoid being found, transportation to get to where you're going, maybe pay the people that are helping you orchestrate the staging of the disappearance. Housing, food, and a host of other things. With the name Phoenix Reeves populating so soon after her disappearance, I can't be for sure, but perhaps something was already going on before she went missing. I can't be 100% for certain, but for her to go missing on December 18, 2011, and for the name Phoenix Reeves to populate only weeks later in January 2012, that is pretty quick and unusual. Though possible, I believe perhaps this address was used prior to her disappearing. Remember, we don't know exactly what Phoenix was into or got involved in, perhaps unknowingly and indirectly. I look at the last conversation that's on record with Mike B, or someone using his phone. It was an extensive conversation due to the conversation lasting 116 minutes, but he claimed he did not speak to her that evening the night before, nor during the day, right before she disappeared. However, law enforcement claims he has been cooperative. He had to, or has to know something, whether directly involved or have knowledge of who's involved. The question comes to, what exactly was Phoenix involved in or got caught up in? I know I've asked that question several times, but that's just what it comes down to. Phoenix was experiencing stress a month before her disappearance, and we just don't know about who or what was bothering her. Another thing that lets me know that this doesn't seem like a staged disappearance with Phoenix leaving on her own is because she had plans to take Goldia to East St. Louis that same day to pick up her great nephew. Because Phoenix had not returned from wherever she was, Goldia had to contact her friend Rosie to take her. This is not something Phoenix would have skipped out on, according to Goldia. Or it may could have been, but of all days? I do wonder about street cameras. I question if they were ever checked because this would give a story of who was driving her car, the time, and where her car went after she left out of the driveway. Now granted, street cameras are typically on main roads, but we have to remember that her Chevy Blazer was found across state lines. At some point, it had to be picked up on camera. There are cameras on the Eads Bridge. One important detail that we don't know, well, law enforcement, I'm sure, disappearance. Time is moving, but still with no progression. Where do we even begin? I guess this is a start, but a case can't be worked if the information is not there and no one is talking. I just want Phoenix to know, and her family, that we haven't forgot and we're still looking. I do have hope, and my heart is with the Coldens. I guess another best-kept secret in Missouri. Until then, this case will remain unsolved and freezing cold. At the time of Phoenix's disappearance, she was 23 years old, stood at 5'6", and weighed 130 pounds. Phoenix is a female, African American, has brown eyes and black hair. She has both ears pierced. Phoenix was last seen wearing gray sweatpants with UMSL or Lindenwood printed down one leg. She had on a dark colored hoodie and tennis shoes. Phoenix would be 36 today in 2024. If you have any information or leads in the disappearance of Phoenix Colden, her current whereabouts, or any information concerning Phoenix, it should be directed to the St. Louis County Police Department at 314-889-2341. I want to thank you for your viewership and listenership of Phoenix's case. Mr. and Mrs. Colden are still awaiting answers. And we know people don't just vanish. Those involved or who have information may now have families of their own. I know they're probably trying to bury this secret in the back of their brains, but they can't. It will always be there to remind them of whatever happened on December 18, 2011. Whether a crime was committed or not, someone holds the answers. Hopefully, we don't have to go another decade without knowing. As always, please be safe, be vigilant, and always be aware of your surroundings. May God bless and keep you all.
Man, I can't ever tell you. Genuinely happy.
Jesus looked straight at them and answered, "This is impossible for human beings, but for God everything is possible." Matthew chapter 19, verse 26.